where again and again these maniacal people are trying to place their desire for change and revolution inside structures of necessity, which are political logic, and giving them, and labeling themselves, you know, it's this kind of action. So politics then as the as an aesthetics of logic, which people put up as a front so that they can behave inside it like lunatics. It's what's going on here. The reference to Geneva, of course, is Rousseau, Gibbon, and God knows what all. I'm going on here, I think I insult you by that. And also, I think Geneva, too, is the place where there's been radical attempts at internationalism quite a number of times. You know, because Geneva somehow has a ring, doesn't it, of like going on at an international level, which some are useful, some are not. Then the idea of the tombs of logic. The sadness of that, all these great like monuments around of systems, like great mausoleums of the ways in which, you know. More important, I think at the end, he would be the lunatic of one idea in a world of ideas, who would have all the people live, work, suffer, and die in that idea, in a world of ideas. You know? And there you have it, seems to me. He would not be aware of the clouds. Like the lightning, the martyrs of logic with white fire. That is, this whole business of like the prophetic mania going on. It's a marvelous image of that sort of, you know, of Pentecostal stuff going on. That somehow that this idea that you're right and there's a system which enables you to be right is madness, is what he's getting on here. The extreme of logic will be illogical, that is the point, but then it's a circular movement. Yeah. The more logical you are, the more mad you are. And finally, a definition of the extreme of that kind of poverty, which it is poverty, because it means you're excluding. Poverty means, seems again and again, exclusions, you see. To make patterns, art, logic, aesthetics, structures, transcendentalism, religion, so on. You exclude. So you can get down to basics which enable you to live in mid-structures, or structures of some kind. The greatest poverty is not to live in a physical world, this is the point. To feel that one's desire is too difficult to tell from despair. So then the definitions follow that it's immorality of what in other poems he calls major men. This, if you're concerned, you might think along these lines at this point, just to break it, that Charles Austin's Maximus poems are to do with them. The idea of Maximus is the idea of this major man. Ezra Pound's image of the Odysseus traveller that goes right through the cantos is a man who's changing and developing so he reaches paradise. I'm afraid I might have to ask that, it might just come again. Yeah, I think that this in Stevens and in Olson and in Robert Dunstan too, and all these people who are writing these long structures, again and again, they tend to be clarifying areas in order to establish what the major man is, or what the maximus figure in Charles Olson is. Or that is the person for whom knowledge isn't poverty. That is, it doesn't make exclusions all the time. In order to make systematic logical structures in which to live. But the reason why the Maximus purpose goes on, and the candidates go on, and Patterson of William Carlos Williams is never finished, is that this is an endless structure, an open-ended structure of accumulating knowledge, so that you become increasingly less poverty-stricken, using Stevens' terms. Do you see what I'm trying to say? This is so you can link this long poem and towards the supreme fiction and Credence of the Summer. And what I said earlier about Wallace Stevens' work being really one huge work, you see. Like the Artemis used to call it, the work. With these other American efforts to create the major man through long period structures of information and of clarification and accumulation of information in that way. I was reading this morning Robert Duncan saying in a preface to a little essay of Charles Austin's that he admits this very much, that his poems are a big collection of the things he's stolen. But he says, like Prometheus, that he's stealing fire, which is very good. That is, you steal from central authority and create what you want. Which is what these people are doing, you see. This is the modern action these poets are involved in, right? They're involved in the great modern action, which is stealing from past aesthetics, meaning formal makings out of energy, right? To create new structure, which is not poverty stricken in that logical way. Huh? So this poem really is absolutely central to the general action of American poetry, which I find a very fascinating out of this. So, perhaps after death, the non-physical people in paradise, and he's back on what paradise would be, which is where Kant is, the pound of been losing, of course, towards death, itself non-physical, may by chance observe the green corn gleaming and experience the minor of what we feel. This is a really heavy criticism of those people who define paradise in some kind of aesthetic way. It's non-physical. And by chance, you might get an experience which is in a transposed, not major key, but minor key of what the total feeling would be. You see, that's what he's saying that way. Poverty is to experience the minor key rather than feeling the major one. Huh? You see, that kind of, it's to do with the sensuality of the sensuousness of knowledge. The adventure in humanity. That means it's onward going, like Odysseus' figure, right? Has not conceived of a race completely physical in a physical world. The green corn gleams and the metaphysicals lie sprawling in majors of the August heat. That is the actual key and the physical world, you see. And this leads very much onto Creedence in the Summer, right? Yeah? This idea of fulfillment, warmth, the rotund emotions, paradise unknown, that is, the paradise has been defined in an aesthetic way. This is the thesis scrivened in delight, the reverberating sound, the right chorale. Ironic forms, then there's no form at all. You get a bit, I don't care for the gnomic rhymings going on in this last section. I think it's a bit forced, frankly. I don't think it's necessary. I mean, delight, right, might, sight coming on here. As if somehow he wasn't secure too much. I think he had every right to be secure by this time, but until the balancings and sound propound and so on, I'm not too keen on that, but maybe I'm being fussy. What might have thought of sight? One might have thought of sight, but who could think of what it sees for all the ill it sees? This is the sight of evil and the thought of it against it, the change. Speech found the ear for all the evil sounds, but the dark italics it could not propound, that is, that the gloomy emphasis. Then the ideal. Neither what one sees and hears, neither what one feels, one could have thought to make so many selves, so many sensuous worlds. This is pluralism. It's not like William James' pluralism theory is here going on. You don't need a single system, a single aesthetic, a single logic. As if the air, the midday air, was swarming with the metaphysical changes that occur, is the point. That it all happens all the time, merely in living as and where we live. That, see, this is saying something like, since the main pleasure is to live in reality through your body and capabilities without mythological or logical system programs, and then you will not be trapped into evasions of mal, whatever it is. Now this could be interpreted, and I have seen it interpreted, and notice there's no question mark at the end of the poem. Because it goes like, as you see, it could in fact end with a question mark. I have seen it interpreted, and I offer it to you just in case you feel that way, that as being a case of Wallace Stevens being extremely passive. You know, he's darn near the transcendental position that he's suggesting earlier. That in fact he is suggesting a world of leisure, pleasure abilities. The criticism comes on that, I mean, who is this man who's going to be capable of this? Where would he get his unearned income? To have so much time on his hand, he's not working. Where is he going to get the education for this? And so on. You know, and I do see there's a point here, but I think if you're going to attack Wallace Stevens for imagining a major man, I think you're wasting your time, frankly. It seems to me that one could attack, I don't think I would care to do it too much, but one could possibly attack those critics by saying, okay, where do you think the changes in education are going to take place? You can only imagine the major man first of all. I think that would be equally loose, but you see what I mean? I think you get the idea. One might have to imagine somehow what you're moving into, seems to me. Have at least a broad idea of what the human is. I think if one was to say about STCQML, I mean, I'd ask myself a question. If you were doing a thing on this, okay, what does poverty mean in that term? How is the poem defining that poverty which is depriving us of being major? That's what the question is, isn't it? That is the answer he's making. He's trying to, most of the poem is for clearing away. Now, in the Credence of the Summer, what he's doing is, it leads very much on, does it not, from the end here, you see. In the Credence of the Summer, he's suggesting a condition of fulfillment, of steadiness, of stability. It's between spring, which is like painful birth, like coming to birth and so on, and autumn, which is like the dying away part, right? So summer becomes like the area. And at the end of Credence of the Summer, he comes on to the image of the rock of summer. And it's like, is it possible to stabilize everything we associate with that fulfillment, without metaphors, into something as firm as that rock? The only important thing in the poem. You see, that kind of idea. Again, it would be silly to attack the man saying, okay, well, who's going to get the leisure and so on to do this? It seems to me. I'd certainly be the last person to, like, pretend that the majority of people in the world have the time, the fame, they have to live like this, or let alone the opportunity. Given the most of us, it's pretty hard. And I can imagine this, an out-and-out socialist being enraged by Wallace Stevens, you see. And the whole tendency is, but then again I would say, okay, what sort of life do you want people to live, if you're a socialist? Do you want them to work? In which case, well, I said, you're no socialist. It's like you're playing a game. But Wallace Stevens is very curiously modern. One always feels that he's the man that is the poet of the guaranteed income. You know, he is the man that's imagining what is coming. And it is coming. That is when the electronification of the environment will reduce the amount of work you can do. And that you will have a guaranteed income. You see, this is how I would tackle. I think how I see personally the value of Stevens, that is one of the imaginers that we need. I think. You see what I'm trying to say? What I was saying last week, I still feel very much. I do think that somehow there's a kind of over luxurious development here, and I feel that Stevens is. The sheer amount of analysis seems to me to be, there's a sense of luxuriating and time-taking going on, which it may be temperamental to me, that I resent somehow. There's a sort of thing of voguish, as this man did. Analysis going on. I was trying to help you put that quicker. And there is undoubtedly very, very few head-on confrontations, to use this can't word, with disaster outside this book. Very few. So there are things to be said like that about it, you see. I feel sentimental about this. But I do think that to criticize a poet purely effectively like that would be silly to my mind. I think the positive side is much more important.
No, I just want to say, it's hypocritical for a professional academic to criticize them on such grounds.
Yeah.
That we can fire it right back at them. Where do they get the leisure to sit around and right. criticize?
Absolutely, I think so. That we get paid to. That's even worse. I don't know quite what your accusation is, John. Yeah.
Like. My accusation is a non-accusation. That it's worth thinking about and worth doing. And
right.
They are not in a morally superior position to him.
Right, exactly.
Even by their own lives.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is stuff. I don't think they realize enough that Wallace Stevens is doing them out of the job, actually. if you think how much academic courses there's in this city do now, which is demolished, just think just how much people study university, which is like inside that poem, and is really being discarded. I don't think Greenwich is a summit. Hang on, just a second. I'm not terribly late, but I rely on you to like to just go if you want to. The way to handle Greenwich to the summer is again as a series. I don't like this word series, as like a space of instances or something. I think that's a bit clumsy too, but you know what I mean? That it's like an area which he's trying to like to define and to lay out as sets of possibilities, a set of instances. I'm thinking of the criticism. I've read an awful lot of criticism of Stevens in the past, not much lately. But I remember the major criticism that they take the leap off from, in section two, the idea of arrested peace. You know, and certainly there is an action of arrestation going on this time, you know. I would prefer to call it something like an imagination of stability, one calls peace. You know, is an important thing. It's very difficult, I think, in our time to know what peace is anyway. It's very difficult indeed. In fact, I was lecturing last night on this war and peace idea, and you know, I wasn't forced to say, and some people they all just resent it very much, that you'd have to prove to me, first of all, there's a distinction. If you are a Christian or a Freudian or a Darwinist. Because they all believe in conflict structures.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they hated it. You know, because I say, okay, like, what would be a non-ideological definition of a non-conflict structure? Huh? Mm-hmm. Now that's what Stevens is trying to do. You see, it's that. And it's a very difficult thing to do. And suppose we call this summer. You see. That is that high point of development. The spring's infuriation's over and a long way to the first autumnal inhalations. Young broods are in the grass, the roses are heavy with a weight of fragrance, and the mind lays by its trouble. You know, he's laying it quite open. He's saying, okay, imagine this condition. You know, I don't think one can call it nostalgia, because we don't know it.
No.
This is the point. And to accuse Stevens of being nostalgic seems to be very silly at this point. It seems to be that negative criticism, but I think that one must clear away this ground, and maybe my mind's overfull with what people have said. And I think, too, if anybody's thinking about the references to Marvell in the beginning of section 3, I think they're right. Because I think that Marvell, remember, has an idea of the soul, ideal position of the soul. Remember that, in the garden, you remember? You know, where the image is of ideal oneness, isn't it? Of the green. You remember? You remember the passage that I'm thinking of? Green thought and green chin. And who would be foolhardy to say that Wallace Stevens is thinking about this? But certainly, it's a similar idea. I think Marvell's one of the best. I must admit, I think that green is green, effigy is a bit I got a horrible feeling that one of Stephen's told them a horrible thing, and I thought, well, I can't repeat that. I mean, it may well have happened, given, because it would be set up as that if you could. I mean, one of the things that's happened in American poetry, which is good, is that a contemporary poet would be released at this point. He would quote. Mm-hmm. You see, and this is, I think this is, you know what I mean? I mean, like, Duncan or Olson would just quote there and feel no compunction at all. It would be like Prometheus and Stephen. And, you know, this is it's a really important matter that one is at last free to quote in poems wherever you want, and it's essential that you do it.
When you say it over again, it's different.
Right, because like you're acknowledging who's valuable. You know. Yeah, okay, Lindsay. I think we'll have another. It's not a final, but we'll have another look at Stephen's next week. Huh? Now, I'll try and look at. I wanted to go quicker, but I didn't think I possibly could. I. What?
No, you couldn't
have
gone quicker.
Sorry, sir. It's just that, you know, I do feel there's so many things I want to, like, do with you because you did you last year. I'll take it. Well, let's have a look at Creedence of the Summit. Is there any point, by the way, you don't get, you know?
Yeah.
Like, put